The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call. 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Clean Care has fought for civil rights in Madison and the country for decades. The former head of the Madison Area Urban League, Kaleem, is now fighting to establish preschools for kids through his One City project. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kaleem Care.
Welcome, welcome, and welcome, welcome, everyone. This is Kaleem Care, your host of Perspectives here today. Loving this opportunity to do this show. And today, you know, I was encouraged by a dear friend and colleague to have myself talk for a little while about some issues in Madison, some concerns that we all have about the country, but more so about ideas about how we can move things forward. So you're going to hear from me today. And my next show next week, we'll have a guest on who I'm sure you all want to hear from. But today, you all, I want to talk a little bit about change and the city of Madison. As many people know me in the Madison area, know that I grew up here. My family has been here for many, many years, since 1907. We are not one of these families that just got off the boat in Madison from Chicago 10, 20, 30 years ago. My grandfather's uncle, Samuel Pierce, was the first member of the family to land here in Wisconsin. And when he was working on the Northwest Railway train in 1907 as a porter, he staffed the dignitary car. So over a number of years, he got to know a lot of prominent people in Wisconsin history, including people like Bob La Follette, Philip La Follette, and, you know, a number of others that people know very well in our state, some around the country. Bob became a member of Congress after that, U.S. Senate. And so I wanted to share with you all a perspective on the city of Madison that I don't think gets shared very often, but also want to talk to you about how we can change this and make it a city that's livable for all of us. As an African-American who grew up in this city and born in the old Methodist Hospital, actually three blocks from where I'm sitting right now in the studio, it has been an interesting experience to experience the changes of our city. In two ways. In one hand, Madison has had a growing population of people of color for many, many years. But when you walk in businesses across the city, you see more progress being made now, probably in the last 5 years. But still, you don't see many of us in a lot of these places. So when you go into public schools, you see what looks like the United Nations in most of our schools. And when you go into a business, though, near those schools, you don't see the same reflection of diversity that you see within the Madison School District. And I wonder, why is that? You know, people keep asking that question. As a native of Madison, I can tell you that, you know, many of us, we've been here for a very long time. There was a period in our history when African Americans were highly employed in this community. I remember a study I read called The Negro of South Madison, which those of you who are interested could probably pick up a copy of that from the State Historical Society or the Madison Public Library. But it talks about a survey that was done of black people. It was a master's degree student at the university who did it. I think her name was Cora Bagley. I think that's the one who did that particular study. But she actually went household by household and surveyed people. And she found that there were many African Americans living in the community at that time, more than she had thought. But what she found most interesting was that of all the households she visited, there was only one household where there was not at least one person working. And that person, I believe, had some health problems or they were older. I can't remember exactly, but there was only one person out of all the households that she visited that didn't have at least, or one household that didn't have at least one person working. We know now that the employment rate among African Americans in our community is a lot higher than that. It's around 18%. Last figure I heard, that's high, very high in comparison to other places. We also know the underemployment rate is even higher because education for a lot of people wasn't something that they were necessarily very successful at. Or Madison is a city where it can just still be very hard for African Americans to make connections and secure the kinds of employment that would allow them to develop the type of wealth and prosperity that our white friends and neighbors have in this community. So it's been interesting to come back to, you know, to be in a home, to come back to my hometown. I came back in 2010 from Washington, D.C., and to see it, this diversity grow within our city. But then second, at the same time, Madison is a city where from leadership, economic wealth, you see all these cranes up, all these apartments going up, all these condos going up. And I ask myself, who's making the money? Who are the ones doing those projects? And they are not people like me. So imagine being a black child who grew up in the city of Madison, who, you know, when you're young and you're growing up, you're five, you're six, everybody asks you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're as idealistic as your white friends that you go to school with. You have the same aspirations. You want to be a firefighter. You want to be a doctor. You want to be a lawyer. You want to be a football player. You want to do something that you feel is great. And it's an interest that drives you. So when you're a little kid and you get a fire truck and you want to be a fireman, you play with that fire truck until the wheels fall off. And that's how excited you are. But then as an African-American child, as you grow up and you become older and you start to hit that period of adolescence, some of our young people hit it a lot earlier now because of everything we show them in television and whatnot. But you're around 11, 12, 13 years old, you start to take on an identity. And children try on all kinds of identities. One minute, your child will come home and they have a new set of friends and, you know, they want to wear a new type of shoes and want to wear a new type of clothes. And, you know, next thing you know, they want to change their hairstyle and then they want to put earrings in their nose and then they don't want to put the earring in their nose anymore. They want to put it on their ear. You know, they go through all of these changes during adolescence, but they're also looking at the world and the world is helping them determine who they can become. So as a black child growing up here, what I continue to see is unfortunate what a lot of our children still continue to see. Now, I'm a kid who came up in the 70s and 80s. So to be a child to come up in the 2000s, 2010s and have the same experience is pretty tough, where you come up, you have these aspirations, but then you don't see anybody that looks like you. You want to be the firefighter, but you know, I know there are black firefighters on the force now, but you can look at the fire trucks and you don't see still enough people in those fire trucks. And so you wonder, can I be a firefighter? You know, probably a better example would be a banker. You walk into most banks in Madison, you may see, I know I see a lot more Latino members at like UW Credit Union, places like that. But even behind the teller line, you don't see many African Americans. And if you want to get a loan, there's not many African Americans that are sitting there as a personal banker or a mortgage lender to actually help you get a loan. And so as a little kid, you might go a place like that with your mom and just reinforces to for you, what can I be? So there's all these things that I want to be. There's all these things that I'm interested in. But what's possible for me? And so people wonder, why are so many African-American kids here interested in entertainment, sports? And it stops there, you know, for many kids, because that's what they see. They can see that on television. They know people get celebrated in those roles. They don't necessarily see people celebrated in the roles that their mother and father have. And their mother and father might be in, you know, hourly wage jobs, toughing it out, you know, maybe enjoy the employer they work for, but they know it's hard work. And the child looks at that parent and they hear that parent complain a lot about the work that they do, about how tired they are. They hear their parents complain about them not being able to pursue their aspirations either, and Madison not being a great place for African Americans. And so as a young child, you grew up with that. I grew up with that. You wonder, well, if there's not a role for me, well, what do I do? And so it's unfortunate that I see in our city a number of young people who are as lost as I was at that age, who are as clueless about what they can become as I was at that age, and who are as in the dark about where the opportunities are, as I was at that age. Now, there are organizations like the Boys and Girls Club and, you know, local neighborhood centers. You have Goodman and East Madison Community Center and Vera Court and all these great places, Lucia Community Center, that do their very best to expose children to opportunity. But the problem, you all, is that still, when they bring those children to workplaces and businesses, who do they see? Do they see people who look like them? So they got the opportunity to get on the inside. Or do they see people who look like those who are always in control, always in power? So even though they get the experience, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to see themselves in that role and continue to strive to be that. It might actually have the opposite effect. They might get into an internship, for example, and see that, man, there are no people of color here. Then they become hyper-conscious about them being the only ones. And then they make a decision that I would never work there because there are no people. And so it's a complex situation we found ourselves in Madison. And I bring this up, you all, because as a child, I had great aspirations of things that I wanted to do. You know, I saw myself doing a lot more in my city. But then as I got older and started to see that the city necessarily didn't see me doing a lot here itself by the very few people of color, African-Americans, particularly black men I saw in any real roles here, I decided to venture out and see my life taking shape outside of the city of Madison. Now, I'm one of the ones who happened to come back twice. Came back after I did a stint in the military and 1 year at Hampton University in Virginia, where I met my wife. Came here for 8 years and then left again to go to Washington, D.C. And I'll tell you, when my wife and I, when we left, I was so happy to move on because I was feeling that glass ceiling imposing in on me. And I was moving in fast. And I didn't feel like even with the education I had just received from the University of Wisconsin and all the great things I felt I had done to help open doors for young people then, that the things that I really wanted to do professionally, that I would be able to really get that done here, I wasn't convinced. But here I am back again, came back again after a decade in Washington, D.C. And what I'm trying to do now, you know, my belief in myself has moved well beyond where I felt I was limited before, because Washington, D.C. opened up a lot of opportunities for me. So it really helped shape my identity as an adult, where I don't really feel like anywhere I live could really hold me back. But I look at our kids, you guys, and I'm walking in banks and I look at their boards. You know, they like to share their pictures of who's on the board of directors of their organization, and they have no people of color, and they might only have one or two women. In Madison, in a progressive, so-called progressive city in 2017, we can still see that. We look at list of donors and where all of us, I would love to be in a position where I could be a donor to a major organization. We don't see many names of people like that either. So I'm going to take a quick break here. And when I come back, I'm going to continue that a little bit. But then I'm going to talk about what kind of a city I think we could have where the doors really do swing open for people. But how we actually can do that and make that happen. This is Kaleem Kerr with Perspectives. I'll be back in a moment. Thank you.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm back. This is Kaleem Kher with Perspectives. I'm going to pick up where I left off. I was talking about the city of Madison, and, you know, those who are listening who may not be from a city like this, you know, I want you to imagine with me the type of city that we're in, because there are a lot of cities like this. It's a majority white population. Our county has almost 500,000 people, maybe a little more now. City has 239,000 at the last census. We're probably pushing 250,000 because people are still always moving here, and students that come to our major university, University of Wisconsin, there's probably 79,000 people on campus at any given time during the day when school's in session between students and staff. So it really defines who we are, but a lot of those folks will end up staying and working here. So we have a built-in factory of people to grow Madison. But we're also struggling with retaining young people, especially those that grow up here. A lot of them will venture out, as people do all over the country. You venture out from home and you learn some things, but a lot of young people don't come back. So a lot of people around the country, including here, are trying to figure out how we keep our talent. But let me go back to the issue related to that, which is being an African-American young person growing up here and not seeing a lot of opportunities for ourselves here, and how that shapes our view of our home city and whether or not we want to stay here and make a contribution. I was talking about how you can go in boardrooms, you go in businesses, and you look at their board of directors on their walls, and you see very few people of color. You look at list of donors and you see very few people of color. You go into classrooms and you see very few people of color as teachers. And you go to the doctor's office and you see very few people of color behind the front desk, in reception area, the physician who checks you in, the person who takes your x-ray, the nurse that comes in and checks your temperature and takes your blood pressure. I mean, so as an African-American child, when you're growing up in a city like this, that where you see very few people who look like you, you start to get a very clear view of what you can't become. And although we try to encourage kids, you can, children believing is, you know, seeing is believing. Children really learn by sight, too. And if they don't see these things, you know, they're going to struggle. So I want to move over from that, because that's still here. It's still a problem in our community that we don't have that kind of representation. There are more people working to open doors, white, black, and otherwise, to do that. But I want to talk about now the city and how we could actually create real opportunity for people here to advance, to have fun, and to have a quality life. Now, I was sharing this with some friends of mine, and they were blown away by it and said, Kaleem, you got to share this with other people. And I said, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I want to, because, you know, people in this community have a way of drawing circles around me and developing my story for me about who I am and what my intentions are. I've been called right wing when I was trying to push a charter school, and, you know, too aggressive when I'm going after new opportunities, and, you know, don't necessarily try to affiliate myself with people who I know will shoot me down, you know. But I want you to envision Madison for a second, just what the city looks like. We have a north side, we have a south side, we have an east side, we have a west side, we have a downtown isthmus, which is centered between two lakes, Lake Monona and Lake Mendota. If you closed your eyes and you think about how is Madison developing itself right now, what's going on that's changing the city? What's going on that's growing the city? You can drive around and you can see cranes that have Stevens Construction, Findorf Construction, Cullen Construction, some of the bigger ones in town. You also there's a design build group. I saw a smaller construction firm. There's Tri-North Builders. None of them, by the way, which have been owned or started by a person of color in this community. And they're building the city, you guys. They're building apartments all over the place. They're building condominiums all over the place. But what you don't see a lot of is you don't see a lot of businesses being built. You don't see a lot of cranes going up building buildings for business. And I'm talking boutique buildings where people will rent out space and you'll have multiple businesses in there. But what about larger businesses growing in our community? Those that are going to provide a stable number of jobs. Think of an organization that's humongous and growing like Epic, which is growing in the Verona area. I've heard all the stories about why it didn't grow in Madison. But it's an organization, it's a company that, you know, has thousands of employees. I'm thinking of companies that could become that, and how businesses could actually help fuel opportunity, creating doors of opportunity for people who look like me. So let me go back to Madison. So I told these folks, I said, you know, I was seriously considering running for mayor of Madison, seriously considering it. And I don't want to get into that right now, but I consider it sometimes, and then sometimes I don't, because I get frustrated by our getting rooted in the problem. Well, what about the opportunity? So I looked at a recent project, and I use this as an example, the Alliant Energy Center. And I said, you know, if I was the mayor of Madison and I had the Alliant Energy Center, I would tell our county executive, because that's mostly county property, I would say, you know, Joe Parisi, man, let's do something extraordinary. Let's make the city of Madison what it really is, what it really is. Let's make it the capital of the state of Wisconsin. And let's get people around this state inspired by our desire to create a great place for all of them to venture to right in our own state, a place that they won't loathe, but a place that they'll love. Because anybody involved in politics knows that Madison and Milwaukee are hated by people throughout the state. They feel like we get too many resources. They feel like we don't pay attention to their needs. And then there's those, you know, kind of out there feelings and thoughts that people have about our liberalism or whatever it is in our community. But there are more reasons for people to not like us than to like us, even though they'll come here and they'll come to party and they'll come to hang out on State Street and go to the bars and experience Madison that way. But about their love for our capital city. I said, so if I was a mayor and I was had the opportunity to work with our county executive, I said, why wouldn't the Alliant Energy Center be a place that was like the entertainment playground for the South Central Wisconsin? Why couldn't we challenge Wisconsin Dells and some of those places and start to create a place right here in our own community where people would love to go? Because I said, if we created something like that and we decided on a plan that could build a new arena that could maybe attract an MLS soccer team to a city like Madison. And I'm serious, you guys, an arena that wasn't just a covered arena, but it had an open environment to it as well, or it had a retractable roof. But it would be in a facility. You know, a friend of mine, Bob Dunn, he has a hams company. They build these facilities around the country. You could have a place that it provided entertainment, provided a place for food. You know, you had restaurants and things that are all around the stadium. So it was a place that was used all the time, not a place that you can drive by on any given day. And you may see cars out there. You may not. That's how the Alliant Energy Center looks now. Every time they get a World Dairy Expo, the place is full. The Dane County Fair, the place is full. You know, Tim Metcalf's Bratfest, the place is full. But that's periodically throughout the year, so it is a largely underutilized space. So I said, why couldn't we build up the Alliant Energy Center and have it be a place where we had restaurants and we had, you know, places where people could go to have fun, and a really souped up bowling alley, an arcade, some rock climbing. I mean, some crazy stuff that people would come and it would just be the experience. But it would also play on our positioning in the state and what Wisconsin and Madison really is. You know, Tim Metcalf had of Metcalf's Grocery had a plan that I started working with him on when I first came back to Madison in 2010, and he let it go, called the Nolan Centennial Project, trying to implement some of the ideas of John Nolan for that whole John Nolan area, We're making the lakes an experience now that people actually go there. There's an amphitheater near the lake where people could go and see a play or a band play or some other type of activity where there was experiences people could have on the lake. Not just the rich people that own homes on the lake. They pop their little boat in the water and they go tour it around, or they jet ski or whatever it is that they do. But a place that people could actually go and rent these things and experience the lake and use the revenue that would be generated from that to help keep the lakes clean. Because we have a problem. Anybody who knows, they drive through Madison, especially if you lived here, you knew a period when the lakes were a lot cleaner. They didn't algae over so fast. And now, you know, you get maybe 2 to 3 weeks, it feels like that. And then all of a sudden, here it comes. The algae blooms come. What if we had a place like that where we could have fun in this city, but it would be everybody in the city contributing to building that location? We could ask people for their ideas in the community about what would they like to see if we created this kind of an environment for people in our city. And then at the same time, work with organizations, the Urban League and Latino Workforce Academy and some of the little construction companies that I named, to actually hire people to build that. And also to work with companies to help develop smaller companies where people of color could actually get involved in the construction game. Wouldn't that be something if, to build this new great thing, the city of Madison and the county got together and required, not only would contractors in the community be required to hire a percentage of their workforce, be diverse, but they would actually have to hire local talent as subcontractors to do the work. Wouldn't that be something? We could actually get some businesses built, some businesses created, even if it was only one or two. It would be a start so that we could literally start to build the kind of companies that would have the kind of revenue and force and support that would be needed in order for us to develop those individuals. And those kids can walk by now and see, not only is the person working, but the person who owns the company looks like me. We could create that environment. And I said, you know, I would call that Madison Central. But then I would also have Madison North, Madison West, Madison East, and Madison South. And I'll get back to that in a second.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
All right, well, glad to be back. Kaleem Kerr, back from a break. I was talking about Madison and some ideas for how we could actually create an environment in a city that people would be happy to be here. We could create more opportunities for happiness in our city and fun, but also get other people involved in that who have been historically left out, underrepresented groups that haven't had an opportunity to participate in the wealth generation and creation in our community by engaging in major projects that create that fun environment, but also that provide opportunities for wealth generation among a much more diverse group of people. So you all think about it. if we were to do a project, like I had mentioned, build an Alliant Energy Center area that was an entertainment playground. It was a small Disney World for South Central Wisconsin. And it would be a revenue generator as a result. It'd be a destination place that people would want to drive into our county to actually experience. So it'd be a revenue generator for our county, for our city. People would spend money in our city. They're here. It would make the building of these new hotels make more sense. But imagine if it was also an opportunity for people who have historically been left out of making money on projects like that to actually start making some money and being able to reinvest those things within their communities of influence. I think about the reverberating effect of that and how impactful that could be if we had this place that was really fun to go to. It had restaurants, shops, stores. It had some housing. You know, I even was talking with someone from Madison College, one of their leaders there, and said, you know, I'm going to really start pushing this idea with members of our county board, and then also after that, our city council, because I said, you guys, we're looking for a location for Madison College in the South area. If I was your county executive, I would give you space right there, but was a part of this broader vision that whatever professions you would educate people for there, like whatever industries or trades you would actually have training there for, I would want it to fuel and support the employment needs of those businesses that were a part of this big project. I would want there to be some relationship, not that that would be all that you would do, but if we're going to have a Madison South campus, let it be a place where people can actually get their education and then walk across the street or down the road to their workplace or their place for internship. Let it be a place that can provide the kinds of trained staff that we would need for those businesses to be successful in that area. Why wouldn't we do that? So I said, you know, let's create a Madison Central, Madison South, Madison North, Madison East, Madison West, and build on the character of those communities in that area. So you think about East Town, West Town. The highlight is East Town, West Town. There's no other highlight there. What is the cultural significance to Madison in the state of Wisconsin of East Town, West Town, other than it's a place where you go shop? What if it was a place where we defined the character of that west side of Madison, including some of our suburban neighbors in Middleton and Verona, where you walked around and there were landmarks and it told the history of the community in that area, the history of Madison. There were landmarks that people would want to come see because people would want to know and have been there. They would want to see the experience. They'd want to read about the history. They would want to experience, you know, what we put there. So I thought about what if there were these landmarks that define historical moments in Madison, Wisconsin history as Madison relates to the state around those places. So you're walking down the street, it's not just a sidewalk with a bunch of stores, but there's actually some landmarks that you stop and you read and you look at as you go by. You know, maybe there's a fountain that kids could play in and adults can play in, and there's chairs and things like that around. It's some convening spaces for people. But we start to build a character for the west side, for the east side, for the north side. You know, I thought about the north side. People are all complaining about Oscar Mayer moving out. I always look for the opportunity in that. I said, okay, if we think about it, Oscar Mayer had a big footprint of property in that area of Madison. And 30 years ago, when I was a little kid and we'd drive by there and we'd smell the meat burning, and you know, they had the slaughterhouse and all of those things. My uncles, I had uncles who worked there and made money for their families and they were there. You know, they had a lot of property, but over the years they just scaled back to the part where they had a headquarters, and that was about it. With all this land that's not being really utilized, well, let's look at the opportunity that that land presents. I said, you know, to my friends, I said, you know what? Wisconsin's culture is also agriculture. And Madison's culture is becoming a culture that's really focused on social justice and being progressive. Why wouldn't we try to attract businesses that were really businesses that were focused on sustainability, that were focused on social enterprise, even if they're profit making, Why wouldn't we try to attract businesses here, like Organic Valley, that's here, it's outside of Madison? Why wouldn't we try to lure them to be inside Madison? Why wouldn't we want to try to bring their headquarters here? Why wouldn't we want to try to become that city that's a city that is going to build on the health and wellness of the world? We've got award-winning hospitals in Unity Point Meritor and UW Health and SSM, Dean St. Mary's. You know, we're defined by that. There's a health environment. We have health technologies being created here all the time. Why wouldn't we try to bring the production of food and other health instruments and things like that here into the city of Madison? That would be my agribusiness area for the city. I would really try to build on the history of Oscar Mayer. I'd get in that Oscar Mayer way. I'd talk to the family. I'm sure some of them still have some money. Let's create something there that still builds on the history of that area and what Oscar Mayer's meant to our community. But let's redefine Madison's business community around where food production and things are going for the future, and try to attract and grow some major agribusinesses in that area, or agri-technology in that area. We got to stop looking at these things as things that we lose and start planning to win, you guys. So that would be, you know, that would help me really define the north side, because we bring more businesses over there. There's more foot traffic. People who are more likely to want to buy homes in that area. You got Wanakee, which is right at the other end of Northport Drive almost. It's a very affluent community. Imagine now those people venturing in and, you know, trying to build on that Northport area where you have Warner Park, and what that park could become. What we could do in that park, you know, not just the ball field, but there's I still think it's a little rundown of a shopping center across the street. Imagine what we could do at that shopping center across the street. And mind you, if our community has an expectation that any major business development that goes on involves people of color, you know, underrepresented groups, women in the building of those projects and in the operation of those projects, then we can really start to create an environment in our community where more people can be successful and more people can see opportunities for themselves. And we're not short on education, you guys. We have a small business development center at the University of Wisconsin that's second to none. They are always willing and open to have themselves or their students help people build business plans. And, you know, my mentor, Gloria Ladson-Billings, who's a very well-known professor worldwide in education at the University of Wisconsin, has preached about Madison being opportunity rich, but access poor. And so we've got so many opportunities to educate people, to get people positioned well, to be successful. But when we don't know how to access it, or they can't access it, it's not designed for them to access it, or they don't have the network to access it. So when I think about that, I said, you know, we got this problem. Here I was a young kid growing up in a community that I wanted to be a part of. And then as I got older, I didn't want to be a part of it anymore because I didn't think it wanted me to be a part of it. You know, I didn't think Madison wanted a guy like me. So I left, went to military, spent time in San Diego and Connecticut and Virginia. And I got a chance when I got to Virginia in particular to see black people being successful, and ended up at Hampton University, one of our esteemed historically black colleges and universities, with black students who were 4.0s and 3.5s coming out of high school. And I had a 1.5 GPA when I graduated from West. Man, I had to raise my game. Then I met this beautiful young woman named Lisa Payton from Richmond, Virginia, who ended up becoming Lisa Payton Care. And she told me her GPA was a 3.8. And I was thinking, I'm about to start this school and I had a 1.5. I really got to raise my game, because there's no way this woman's going to hang out with a guy who's got a D average and probably will go D nowhere. And so, but it was everything around me that shaped my experience. It was what I saw. It was what I experienced. Why can't we have that in Madison, Wisconsin, you guys? Why can't we have that in cities like this, in Dubuque, Iowa, and probably a little small, maybe we go to Des Moines. But why can't we have it in places like that? Why do we have to leave these places in order to find this? Why do our kids have to grow up in places like this, devoid of the vision of what opportunity could look like for them? And then we wonder why they're hanging out, why they don't go to school, why they don't want to hang out in school, Why they don't want to do anything while they're there. Or they get there and they're depressed. They still might get a 2.5 or a 3.0. And some might even get a 4.0. But those kids that are getting those 4.0s, they're so ready to get the heck up out of this city that they never come back. And they take that great talent somewhere else. Why do we have to do this to ourselves? Why do we still have to be that way? And so I think about, we have to start connecting challenges with opportunity. We have to start looking at the reality of our experience in Madison, not just the experience from white eyes, but the experience from black and brown eyes, too. And we have to wrap around that, because we all belong to the city. We're all doing our work here. People say, oh, I'm a taxpayer. Well, everybody's paying sales tax. They might not necessarily own a house because they can't. You trace their family lineage and bloodline back. You know, I tell people, black people, most of us in this country can trace our lineage back to slavery. And unfortunately, 372 years, you guys, of formal discrimination against our people. When you look at slavery, you look at civil rights, the Jim Crow era, and even after civil rights, there's a period I refer to as the civil rights adjustment period, which I look at from 1964 to 1991, where we had the first civil rights bill passed in 64. And then there was the Voting Rights Act of 65, the housing bills of 68, and all these others, affirmative action. But every time we were fighting to get those things passed, there were people fighting against us. And some of them are still fighting against us. So there's still people fighting against our liberty and our inclusion in this country. But you put all that on a people, and then you come to now and you wonder, well, why are they still struggling? Well, think about it. We've only been a little more than 50 years since the signing of the Civil Rights Act. That's a blip on the screen in the history of the world. How much progress do you expect people to really make? And if you look at the adjustment period, where people are fighting against these options. You know, we had affirmative action for a little while. And then we had the Bakke case of, was it 78, I think it was, where the Supreme Court said we can't have quotas. So we had quotas when we kept black people locked up for 200 and something years and under Jim Crow laws for another 100 years. But we can't have quotas for more than 7 or 8 years because white people got upset that now they're being discriminated against. So the ability to equalize the advantage of African Americans ended there, in my opinion. Affirmative action has been a symbol of what it was supposed to be since then. And so we wonder, why has it been so difficult? Well, because white people started to create wealth in this country 2, 3, 4 generations ahead of us. And by the time it got to us to now be able to break out, the country's economy changed. We went from being able to at least get that good factory job in the 70s to now in the 80s, that's gone. It was disappearing at light speed. Now we're in the technology era where I remember Dell and Apple and Microsoft and all these groups were getting together to try to end the digital divide, which we still have, by the way. But it was a big focus because not only did we're no longer prepared for the jobs of the future. Our schools weren't designed to prepare us in these places like people wonder Chicago. Chicago was designed to get black people into basic training and get them into a basic entry level job. It wasn't really designed to do much more than that. Some of us were fortunate to move beyond that, but it wasn't designed for that. And they're still trying to redesign that city to be a city that can produce children who are much more prepared to operate in this current economy. So here we are now, not much far removed from 1990. And you look at it when we started measuring schools and their ability to provide kids, were they actually doing the things that would help a kid succeed? You guys, No Child Left Behind was the first real serious national effort in 2001. It was passed to actually help kids to identify whether or not they're all really doing well or not. So it hasn't been that long. So when I turn back the page again, though, I'm like, well, why not in a city like Madison, where we are much more prosperous? We're supposed to be more enlightened. We play on our progressive past probably more than we should. But we are an enlightened people. It's a much more prosperous community. Even when the tank dropped out of the bottom of the country in 2008, we had the worst recession since the Great Depression. Madison, we'll move through that pretty smoothly. But people of color did not. It became a worse situation for us here, where any progress we made, not only here, but around the country, we lost so much wealth, we lost so many opportunities because it was those jobs and things that we were now in that were the first to go. Because it was all, a lot of it was focused on the housing market, and many of us were first time homeowners in our families, or maybe we had one generation ahead of us. We lost all that little wealth we created. We're behind the eight ball. So you guys in Madison, let's now structure this community in a way where we can help people catch up without eliminating the opportunities for those who are white to also make a way for themselves as well. Let's just make the competition even. Let's do things that make the competition even. Let's open the door and require, you have to do that. You have to require people that have resources and means to open the door for others. Not that they got to let everybody in, but let those in that are most qualified and prepared and ready to be there. And then also invest in things that help get people ready. Now, Madison's doing that, but we're investing in programs. And people get out of the program and they can't get a job because we haven't yet opened the door there. So imagine if we created this beautiful environment around the city of Madison. We made Madison a destination to die for, that people wanted to come here, at least from around our state. What if we did that? What if our mayor, I saw where he took, and I respect Paul Soglin, you know, even though I've heard he had been upset with me about, you know, potential interest in running for office several years ago. I still respect that man. He's done a lot for the city. My grandmother loved him. Members of my family did. I remember putting his yard signs out in yards in South Madison for my grandmother. She'd just tell us, go to such and such house and put that in the yard. But he took 26 trips I saw outside of the state last year. I was like, man, what if he took 13 of those and he took them around the state of Wisconsin? And he went and he built relationships in these areas where these people loathe us, where he started to build the bridge and have some of his team travel the state, because we're not the capital of Dane County, people. Madison isn't on an island, or we're not in this bubble that we think we're in. We like to think we're the greatest. We're the number one. Are we number one to people around the state of Wisconsin? Or are we number one to ourselves? Because until we become number one to the people of the state of Wisconsin, we will always live in a situation where when times get rough for us, and it hasn't really gotten there yet, but at some point it will the state be there to support us? Will these people around the state see we got to save our capital city? Well, why would they when we haven't done anything to try to save them? Why wouldn't I, as Paul Soglin, try to work with others to see the prosperity of all of us helps us all? You know, you have places like Superior way up there in Wisconsin and some of these other communities where people are destitute because the jobs have dried up. A lot of the anger and resentment towards people of color and people with means and people in power has been developed by the fact that those who were prosperous 30, 40 years ago, they're struggling just like people in inner city are now. So why wouldn't we go to those places and figure out how we could use our muscle? Why wouldn't the mayor and the university president work together with our county executive and our local counties around this county, you know, that surround us, that still do pretty well? Why wouldn't we be reaching out to figure out how we can help our brothers and sisters across the state attract businesses there? Why wouldn't we try to work with them? So maybe there's a business that's located, its headquarters in Madison, but its manufacturing arm is in northern Wisconsin. Why wouldn't we do that? Or vice versa? Because if we did something like that, you guys, we would all benefit, because there would be more opportunities for all of us. There would be a stronger relationship and stronger connections between us. And therefore, we would have, I think, a much more prosperous future. So I wonder if we can get to these type of things, you guys, to create an environment in our state, in our community, where people of color can be successful. I will not accept the number that Madison is the worst place for black people in this country, or the state of Wisconsin is the worst place. If you live with what the numbers look like right now, it absolutely is. Madison, I mean, Minnesota, Michigan, Iowa, all these northern communities, Illinois, all these northern states are like running neck and neck for the worst place for black people. Problem I have as a black person, I got to drive through those states to get to the free states, right? So I want to make my free state where I am, but I also want to make all those states better too. But let's be the model. If the problem is the problem, let's fix it. Let's not sit here and complain about it. And to my brothers and sisters who are listening to this, To those of you who will listen to this podcast, and you hear me talk, you hear what I'm talking about, and you think, oh, I'm just going to leave. Where are you going? Where are you going to where our people are doing that much better? There are a handful of places in this country, and I've been to them. I lived in one in Prince George's County, Maryland. I loved my community. I loved living there. I love Maryland. I told people, my wife doesn't like when I say it, I don't know about D.C. because I worked in politics. I worked in the depths of it, you guys, on the education community development side. And I saw how stuff was done. And I developed a disdain for both the Republican and the Democratic Party in my experience there, because I didn't feel like people did things always with their best, with the best interest of the people. And that's what I went there excited to do. But I also saw how poverty is just, and illiteracy rates are astronomical in the city of Washington, D.C. While some of us, we want to go there because we know there's also a much higher percentage of black people that are doing well. Well, I'm sorry, for a brother like me who didn't come from a whole lot, I didn't come from abject poverty, but I didn't come from a whole lot. And I wasn't raised by my mama and daddy either. My aunt, my grandparents, people in the community raised me. My goal isn't to go find an island where I can feel happy and content. My goal is to be in a place wherever I'm at, to make it a place where we can all be happy and content. So my brothers and sisters, black folk, Latinos, whatever, is this going to be a place that we're going to just sit back and be upset about or run from? Or while we're here, are we going to try to open the door to opportunity for the next generation to not only open the door for black and brown kids, but open the door so that white kids will keep the door open for us too? Will we do that? Will we also be their mentors? Will we be their guides? Will we be their supporters? So the last thing I'll say is education. We need better schools, you guys. We need schools, and I say better, schools that are actually going to prepare our kids for the future. I'm sorry, this 12 years of liberal arts education that we give our children plus kindergarten makes absolutely no sense in a time where innovation is happening so quickly, creative class is growing so quickly, and now we're importing creative people from around the world because we're still producing liberal arts graduates here. What if we didn't? Why don't we have a performing arts school for kids? Jen Cheatham, create the performing arts school. Work with Ted Deedy at our Overture Center. The Pleasant Rowland and her husband, Jerry Froggy, spent $200 million plus on that place. That wasn't just for people with means and wealth to play. Create a school that goes along with that. That place doesn't really operate in the mornings during the day. Use that space to teach our kids about the arts. We should have a great visual and performing arts school for our children in Madison. If you're not down with that, something's wrong with you. Why don't we have real STEM education in our community? We got this world-class university we love to talk about, but the only kids that get the world-class STEM education are the kids who are professors, whose their parents are those professors doing it at the university. What about the kids that grow up in South Madison where my little preschool is? Why can't they be a part of that? Why do they have to get the STEM education on the mobile cart? While the kids at West High School that are eligible now, 5-10 years later, to get into those upper level classes, they might get a little something better. Why don't we have a real STEM school? I mean, a real high school, like redevelop Madison West and East High School. They're old, broke down buildings anyway. Make them state of the art schools where we have the greatest stuff there for young people. And then, but also help those young people understand the social responsibility to recreate the opportunities that we created for them. I'd have all those kids required to take a class on social responsibility. And it would include civics and everything else that we've taken out of the curriculum, but it would be called social responsibility. And every kid would have to take their first semester of ninth grade. They'd have to take a class in that. And then I would ensure that that theme was built into the curriculum of all of our major courses at every level as they went through high school, so that they understood that it's not just about you. It's about everyone else, too. So we can produce the kind of leaders that will sit on a radio show like this and tell you, the listener, that we can create a community that provides real opportunity for people where we can have fun. We can live a life of success with together, and we can create an environment where everybody can succeed. This is Kaleem Kerr, Perspectives. I look forward to being back with you next week. Don't get angry at me. Don't call me names. Listen to what I was saying and thinking for yourself. Could we do that? Could we create that kind of city? Peace.